Chapter 25, the last chapter. The Evening Standard had it on the front page, with a huge headline that screamed, "Marine Colonel Shoots Terrorist Pair, Saves Russian President." Jo Bain told Beck she could take 2 weeks' leave, effective now, and Charlie drove her back to Dolphin Square, sat her down, poured her a large brandy, and again thanked her for taking such trouble. "Only doing my job, Charlie?" "Not every girl would stand herself in front of her husband in case the shooting started." "Ah, well, I'm not every girl, am I?" She was immensely cuddly, and he told her that as well. "Perhaps we could do something about that a bit later on," she said, cocking an eyebrow and giving him her overbite smile, licking her lips. In fact, much later, after she'd made them poached eggs on toast and new potatoes, they had quite a rough house in the warm and loving bed she'd left on the night of her wedding. In the end, she did not get up again until almost noon the following day. Next day in the post, Charlie found a flat package addressed to him. Surprise, he thought, wondering how Father Gregory had managed to get it to him this quickly. Then he looked at the postmark and saw that it was from Melrose on the border. Was the canny old monk getting money moved around and giving Arthur, the bank manager, the tip-off? The package contained a few pages of translated manuscript and an envelope addressed to Charles Gauntlet, Esquire, covering letter, it said. Naomi had dictated all those hundreds of years ago. "I saw you, my dear Amelius, with your men and with Jesus, and I wept like a child for him. As Ebb had been out to buy food and she returned with the news that Pilate had sentenced the master to death, to be crucified with two common robbers. We were told that Pilate had sent Jesus to King Herod, hoping that he would reprieve him, but the priests, together with the Sanhedrin, led by Caiaphas the chief priest, demanded that he be put to death. We were also told that Pontius Pilate washed his hands in front of the crowd to indicate that he was against what was being done. So, in the end, he would take no responsibility for the action. It is brutal and shameful what is being done, made worse by the dreadful mockery your friend Pilate has visited on Jesus. I saw that he wore a purple robe and that horrible crown of thorns. I also saw the notice that Pilate had written. All the time we hear about the Roman way, but this is barbarous. I came near to the place of a skull, and once there could hardly believe how terrible it was. All three condemned men cried out as the nails pierced their flesh and bones, and it was especially bad for Jesus, you could tell. I stood quite near to him briefly as he was being taken up to the place of execution. I wept, for he looked so dreadfully ill, and his back was lacerated in great bleeding strips where the soldiers had flogged him. Our good Lord seemed not to be there, bewildered, unable to look people in the eye, and without dignity. It is strange how quickly people have turned against him. He staggered under the weight of the cross they made him carry, and I heard him cry out again in agony as they were putting the terrible instrument in place. Like me, Romilius, you will have become disturbed as the weather has suddenly changed. This afternoon it was unusually hot, sultry, with clouds coming in over the mountains. Both Azeb and I were exhausted, and our heads hurt deep within, just before that terrible storm broke with its thunder and lightning. The lightning seemed to tear at the clouds, and the rain sounded like an army of horsemen galloping across the city. I thought we were all going to be swept away, it was so violent. Azeb tells me one huge bolt of lightning landed upon the temple itself. People have been frightened, and there is talk that putting the Lord Jesus to death has been an awful and greatly wrong thing to do, so bad that Jehovah is visiting his wrath on us. Your messenger has just left me, and I'm speaking to Petros. Romilius, I'm heartbroken that you could not save Jesus' life. I know you tried, but the poor man had been so worn down, I suppose in the end he simply wanted to give up. The man you sent said that at the end Jesus shouted out, "It is finished." Is that true? I questioned the soldier, but he tells me that he was not there when this happened. He also said that the man from Arimathea, Joseph, was allowed to take the Lord Jesus' body away, and that his mother went with them. They have, your soldier says, washed the body, put it in a clean cloth, and laid it in the tomb that Joseph had made for himself. How terrible it all is! My eyes are sore with weeping. What a kind, good man Jesus was. He would hurt no person. There are moments when I cannot believe he's gone, for his presence seems strong and close to me. What shall we do? I've moaned and wept with grief, and Azeb has also shed bitter tears. Your second messenger has left, and I do not understand. Are we in danger just because we allowed Jesus to eat here with his followers? What can all this mean? Yes, I will come to you now, because you say we must leave for Rome. Father Gregory wrote, "My dear Charles, this is all we end up with. Nothing complete or clear, except for Amilius's letter, which is with the diary. You will recall that he said Azep and Petros had been murdered, and that the story was about that Jesus had risen from the dead. We hear nothing of this from Naomi. Indeed, we do not even hear of Naomi arriving to meet Romilius. So it is a total mystery, which is truly as it should be, for God works through mysteries and is difficult to understand. Jesus told us that it would be hard to believe in him. It is, and that is all we can say. I am in no doubt that Naomi's MS is old, ancient, in fact. My concerns do not lie there. My doubts and anxieties are wallowing in the girl's theology, which is more 19th century than 1st century. It is very strange. For those of us who labour in God's vineyard, it is enough. All that has gone on, my dear Charles, is for the power and for the glory. Soon I shall be leaving all pain and mystery behind, for I am tamed, unwilling, by time. What do I mean? You will discover. God bless you. Pray for the absolution of my sins. Remember that those of us who are swamped in our faith really do not need any extra proofs, for the proofs are all around us. In a luxury suite high in the Carlton Tower Hotel, Ilyich Antonovich Chermiet sat facing a group of powerful men. "You see," Chermiet said in his accented Russian, "you see, I was right. It has all come about as I suggested to you. The outrageous man whom they called alchemist is dead. This was quite predictable. He could not have lasted forever, and it has happened. The British have scaled back their security. The Bortunins even did this idiotic business of what they call a walkabout this afternoon, outside the Parliament building. Now, I presume we are all still of the same mind, so my people will deal appropriately with President and Madame Bortunin while they are still here in London. We can go on from there as planned, gentlemen. Might I suggest it should happen outside the Mansion House, just before 1 o'clock on Thursday? That will give you all plenty of time to be back in Russia. Good? Yes?" This concludes the reading of Day of Absolution by John Gardner. The book was read by Frederick Davidson. If you would like to obtain a complete printed catalogue of our titles, or our monthly update telling you about new releases, and our new collection of books on CD, write Blackstone Audiobooks, P.O. Box 969, Ashland, Oregon 97520. Or call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. You may also obtain the same information from our award-winning website. Our address, all one word, is www.blackstoneaudio.com. Thank you.